Mary and Donna, who will be having this workshop. Good luck.
Thank you.
Do you want to announce that?
I'm Terry, I'm an addict.
Hi, Terry.
Okay, we have these workbooks that we made a couple hundred of them, and it looks like that was not enough. So if you're couples and you're by someone who doesn't have one, maybe you could share. I have a list here. Anybody who would like to have the book via email, I can send it to you as a PDF or as a Word document so you can alter it, make whatever changes, and nothing in here is proprietary. So after the workshop, if you would, anybody who needs this by email, just fill it out up here, okay?
Okay. Hi, I'm Donna.
Hi, Donna.
And I'm a very grateful and humble member of Kohanon. Okay, so what kind of gives us the ability to do this workshop is some of our experience as a couple. And we've been married since August 5th, 1978, which is before a lot of you... yeah. Way before a lot of you were born, which is kind of funny to me. You know, some of the challenges we've faced, we got married really quickly. You know, we got married within less than a year after we started dating. We had a business failure, you know, living with addiction and alcoholism and bankruptcy, cars being repoed, troubles with the IRS. We lost a child, infidelity, separation, raising children, teenagers. Our son had his own experience with drugs and alcohol, making his life and our life unmanageable. The economic downturn, health problems, career challenges, and, you know, just life.
Okay, so yeah, we've had our share,
yeah,
right?
Just
so
a little.
I think we're qualified, and we ought to put after our anniversary, August 5th, 1978 was when we were married, and then we were born into a new marriage and a new life on May the 23rd, 1991, when the grace of Cocaine Anonymous touched our life and our totally broken marriage. We were at a place of as far apart as a couple could possibly be. You know, in the beginning, it was love, it was wonder. And by the time addiction had just destroyed everything beautiful in our relationship, and there we were, so far apart as the East is from the West. But because of the principles embedded in this program, a program that I didn't necessarily believe in, I know Donna didn't have any belief in me. We were at a place where we had known that there was really no hope for us. But because of this program and the healing grace of these steps, a lot has changed. So we're talking about the Stockholm Syndrome. So this booklet that we have is translated into Swedish as well. I don't know how good that translation will be. The Swedes will be able to improve upon it, I'm sure. So underneath each section, we'll have it in Swedish as well. So the Stockholm Syndrome, when they picked this topic and they asked us to do a relationship workshop, I'll tell you why we had a quick marriage. I met Donna and I saw qualities in this woman that blew my mind. She was gorgeous. She could do art and a great cook, this incredible woman. And there was something inside of me knew that I needed to take her into custody quickly before this thing that had come up again and again in my life where, you know, I would build my life up and then tear it all down. And I just knew I had to, like, hook her up quick. And that was maybe one of the greatest things that I've ever pulled off in my life. And So the Stockholm Syndrome, the first story, it says in 73, a group of Swedes were held hostage in a vault during a bank robbery for 6 days, and they grew attached to their captors. So the definition of the Stockholm Syndrome is to develop or to have compassion or sympathy for one's abductor. I am an abductor. So I didn't know I was an abductor. I was in love. But there's a big difference. Next, we're going to talk about dating versus hostage taking. Are you okay with yourself? How does it feel to live inside your own skin, or do you need someone else to be able to make you complete? In our literature, it says, since defective relations with other human beings has nearly been the cause of our immediate woes, including our alcoholism or addiction.
Okay, so one of the things is it's really important to have a good sense of who you are before you can be in a healthy relationship with someone else. If not, you become lost in the other person. Without a sense of self, our moods become your moods, good or bad. We can find ourselves watching the other person to see how your day's going to be. You know, if he'd come in and I could see that he had problems and he, you know, was unhappy and irritable and grumpy, I had no right to be okay. I had no right to be happy. And so, you know, it's kind of like being out on in the ocean, you know, in a little boat with no oars. Whatever way the current takes is the way my emotions went. So I have no power over myself or my emotions because he's my power.
Now, we started out as a love affair, right? And I'm building on this relationship that I have with Donna. And I thought I was a good man all the way through it. Even in my addiction, I could discount some of the things that I had done and some of the horrible behaviors. But where it really hit home the first time for me was I was on leave from the treatment center and I was able to go home for an afternoon and be around my wife and kids. And so there I was, and I said to Donna, I said, hey, do we have a soda? Could I have a Coca-Cola? And she said, oh, I'm sorry, we don't have any. And I didn't really hear it. And then later I said, do you know where the ashtray is? Oh, I don't know. I'm sorry. I'll go find it. And I heard it. And man, when you hear a truth like what I just described, I realized how abusive I had been in my disease and how sick my family had gotten. Because it dawned on me in that moment that my wife was apologizing for things she hadn't done wrong. She was just doing what she felt she had to do to try to keep the lid on this family, to try to keep King Baby from banging his fucking spoons on his high chair and using every little trivial thing as my excuse to go out and rob what little we had for another hit of dope. And so the level of brokenness, I believe that God gives us a level of like emotional shock that wears off slowly. But if you don't start to put something back into the relationship, all you're left with eventually is the raw wounds of a broken life. So our program talks about on page 3, it says the problem is defined in the big book in the 12 and 12. All right, so here's what it says. The effects of addiction and alcoholism on our loved ones and us is huge. Here's a partial list from the AA Big Book about what we're up against. Full of fear, guilt, shame, remorse, horror, hopelessness, terrible sense of impending calamity, terror, madness, declining morals, loneliness, despair, bitter morass, self-pity, annihilation, all things worthwhile, misunderstanding, fierce resentment, financial insecurity, hopeless condition of the mind and body, hopelessness, the futility, the way we've been living, pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization, puzzled and frightened, depression, inferiority, misery, bad repute, hopelessness, untold grief, scandalous gossip, criticism, ridicule, a blight, a veritable plague, just to name a few. And then they add in in the bedevilments, we were having trouble with personal relations, couldn't control emotional nature, prey to misery, depression, couldn't make a living, feeling useless, full of fear, unhappy, couldn't seem to be of real help to others. Then they add in the four horsemen of the apocalypse, terror, bewilderment, frustration, and despair. And then it says, years of living with an alcoholic or an addict is almost made to make anybody neurotic. The entire family is to some extent ill. And then, is it perfectly clear that you can't face all that on your own? So the solution, as the big book states, which is laid out a little on page 5, when we became alcoholics, addicts, Kohanans, codependents, crushed by a self-imposed crisis, we could no longer postpone or evade. We had to fearlessly face the proposition that either God, as you understand God, that's your deal, is everything or is nothing. What was my choice to be? To go it alone or to get the help that I needed in CA or in Kohanon family groups? Oh, and one last thing at the bottom of this page, it says a relationship is like eating with chopsticks. It looks easy until you try it.
You know, old patterns grip us tightly. Even when behavior pinches us painfully, we are loath to give it up. Its familiarity makes it tolerable, knowable, somewhat manageable, and far less scary than trying something new. You know, I call that the uncomfortably comfortable. You know, the fear of making any change because you know how uncomfortable it is, but you've lived with how uncomfortable it is. And that change is really scary because we don't know what the outcome of that's going to be. And, you know, but today we have a solution for that, you know, and the 12 steps in this program give us that solution to be brave enough to step out of that really, really uncomfortable place. And then in Courage to Change, page 49, it's easier to accept the limitations of others when I acknowledge my own. I see that my thinking has often been distorted, my behavior inconsistent, my perceptions of myself have been so inaccurate. How reliable can my perceptions of others be? You know, living with addiction really, really warps how I react and interact with absolutely every relationship I have. And that's not how I started out, you know? I started out as just being so happy and filled with joy, and everything was an adventure and fun. And, you know, the disease of addiction robs us of all of that. And it changes how we perceive the world around us. You know, we look at everything as fearful. You know, I've got to think about what's the next thing. I've got to think ahead 4 steps.
Okay, so if we turn a couple pages, on page 8 and page 9 and 10, what it does is it has the questions for you about the 12 steps regarding relationships. And then in the pages after that are in Swedish. So if you go to page 12, if you have a booklet, and what it says, so we're talking about relationships in this workshop. So relationship with yourself, a relationship with your higher power, and then relationships with the most intimate people that you're involved with in your life. So the first relationship is with yourself. A great philosopher named Ram Dass said there is only one marriage, and that is between you and God. The reason you form a partnership is to do the work of going to God together. If you are in a relationship for convenience or for sex or finances, it will pass and there will be suffering. So then underneath that it says, do you have a relationship with you? And then it has questions that you would want to ask. And they're great questions. The reason we did these workbooks and the reason we're happy to send them out to you via email is so you could take them, apply them, cut them up, paste them, add your language, do whatever you want to them, and then add in anything you add to it, feel free to send to us so that we can then learn from your experience. Because we were saved by grace. We were saved by people that modeled like healthy relationships. Because by the time we came to the rooms of Cocaine Anonymous, there was absolutely no health or vitality in our relationship.
Okay. I learned again and again in my life, until you get your act together, you're not ready for the big love. What you're ready for is one of those codependent relationships where you desperately need a partner. You know, and so if I don't have a relationship with myself and with the higher power, what am I attracting? You know, I'm needy. I need somebody to complete me. I'm not okay without somebody. So no matter how good that relationship is at the beginning, it's not going to be able to survive. And Mr. Right could walk in, and if I'm not centered and balanced and have a relationship with myself and with God, I'm going to screw that up. So that's why it's so important to have a relationship with yourself first and then have a relationship with your higher power before you can bring in a healthy relationship.
Cool. So the next relationship is with the higher power. And that's really a question, do you have trust in your higher power? Or do you have a false image of God imposed on you as a child or imposed by your own broken thinking? Policeman God, Disneyland God, foxhole God, punishing God, no God. We develop our own spirituality in our own way, and you can, it's a blank canvas. You get to create your own relationship. You get to define your own God, and then you get to bring that power into this thing called life.
Okay, relationships with others. People walk over the person God put in their path because they don't look like what their diseased minds picture their part as a partner. You know, so many times we have this idea of what we need and what we want, and it's like a fantasy. It's not a reality, and we step over people who are really, really good people, and then it's as Is it possible to get as crazy and sick about relationships as it is about drinking and drugging? You know, relationships are your drug of choice. I need one. I need it now. Oh, this one's old. I need a new one. And you just keep hopping from one to the other because you want the thrill, the excitement. And then this can, you know, we can get really sick over these things and, become suicidal. And, that's where the disease of addiction took me, was to the point of, you know, contemplating suicide on a regular basis. And I'm not alone. You know, there's another Kohanon member that's a close friend of mine that ended up in a closet, you know, with a gun, thinking that she just wanted to end her life. So Dr. Paul O says, am I as aware of my shortcomings as I am my partner's? Yeah, that's hard, you know. I can always look at what's wrong with him. I don't want to look at what's wrong with me. As a couple, we grow together or we grow apart. We don't stand still. You know, we're constantly moving in life, and we get to choose what direction we want to move in. We've discovered that more than one partner in a relationship changes, the more difficult it is for the other person to continue their old behaviors. So as, you know, be the change you want to see in your relationship, you know, give what you want in your relationship. And it may not, you know, we don't look for instant gratification. Change is slow.
You know, during, just in the last hour, they had one of the leading doctors in Sweden here who was discussing codependency. And this man is, I guess, at the forefront of a movement trying to have that identified as a disease in its own right. And anybody who has ever found themselves so totally connected to, as a human being, I'm connected to you, we live in community. So the ability to be there comfortably, a friend of mine in Texas, his wife said to him, you know, I can't take it anymore. I'm gonna end my life. I'm sick of this shit. And he said, well, why don't you go ahead and do something about that? And she walked in another room and stuck a gun to her head and pulled the trigger. She didn't die. A remarkable story of transformation in their relationship. But the point is that we can get so terribly sick and dependent upon one another, and that isn't what love is. Love isn't about that kind of dependence. It's about an interdependence. As I shared last night, some of the wisdom of Cahil Gibran about how we're supposed to be apart. Don and I have a great marriage today, but I have my recovery, she has hers, and together we have our relationship and our love. And if I try to run hers, it's going to go bad. If she tries to run mine, it's going to go bad. A relationship is just like a garden. So is a recovery. And here's how I see it, plain and simple. You can have the best recovery in the world today, but if you don't tend to it, in a number of months or years, it's going to be something you don't want to see. You could plant the most beautiful garden and have the greatest harvest this fall, but if you don't tend to it, next season, all it will grow is weeds. And a relationship is the exact same thing. And that's why we know what to do. And later in this workshop, we're going to cover a lot of the things that we've done personally that have brought us to a place where we're able to live, not just live together, but share a love together. See, I decided if I'm going to be sober, I want to love being sober. So I follow the 12 steps as my path. Our relationships are even more difficult in some ways because the path is not as clear. But so what I know is if I take care of my recovery and then we work at this relationship like we tend to that garden, and you do it through acts of service, acts of love, by understanding what each other need from each other. So there are four stages in a relationship. It's on page 16. The first is the beginning, right? In the beginning, it's attraction, it's fun. It's like you put your best foot forward. Like, hey, baby, what's happening? How are you? You know, and it's all smooth, and you're all cool. And then there's the next stage.
Yeah, then there's building the foundation, you know, the excitement of building a life together, you know, getting married, having a house, you know, and all that fun of planning and making this life together.
Right, and then you start the maintenance, right? That's where you start to learn how to argue and how to work your way through difficulties. You keep dating and trying to build this thing up without taking each other for granted.
And then there's the oh shit stage. And, you know, because now we're into life. We've got a career, we've got a house, we've got a mortgage to pay, we've got kids, we start having... How do we balance all that, and how do, you know, we get so busy being busy that we forget to be a couple? And then a couple, this is a couple being married 81 years was asked, what's the secret of a long and happy marriage? The wife answered, I always let him have my way.
Okay, so... There was a philosopher, G.K. Chesterton, and he said, they said, what would you like to come back if there's such a thing as reincarnation? And he said, if there is, I hope and I pray that I get to return as Donna's next husband.
Okay, and then, you know, the grass is always greener where you water it. You know, if you take care of what you have and you nurture and you build that relationship, it's going to grow.
Okay, so in the next part, and here's where the workbook will be a lot more fun for you when you take the time and sit there, read everything, meditate over it, and write. So list the most important relationships in your life. So throw out some. What's the most important relationship? Self. What else? God. Your son. Yeah, parents, right? Those are the key relationships, right? For me, I got God, Donna, my sons, my granddaughters. That's the important stuff.
Okay. List the qualities, strengths, and characteristics you value and want most in your partner. So, you know, take some time and really, really think about what you want out of a relationship. And think deeper than, you know, the physical attributes or financial or whatever. What do you really, really want out of a relationship? And then the other part is, you know, what are you willing to bring to the relationship? We can't be like, you know, a leech and just suck off somebody else's vitality and experience. We have to bring something to the table to balance a relationship. And then are you the kind of person you want to be with? You know, if I'm always bitchy and naggy and, you know, I want, and, you know, I always call it the little nipping dog, you know, is that what I want out of my relationship?
Yeah, divine order would have it that the monkey was a symbol for me when I was dating her by her father. And they gave us a nipping dog and a monkey. It's perfect.
Yes.
So at the bottom of page 18... I love you, you're perfect, now change. That was our dear friend Leo R. who used to say that. But I love this one. A relationship is like a deck of cards. In the beginning, all you need is two hearts and a diamond. By the end, you wish you had a fucking club and a spade. Okay, so in the first questions we asked on the previous pages about what are the most important relationships, now it gets really difficult. Self-analysis. Our book says prayer, meditation, and self-examination. Self-examination are our inventories, our nightly reviews, the way that we check ourselves and our thinking. Right, so it says that when those three things are taken separately, they bring about a lot of good. But it says when they're logically related and interwoven, they form an unshakable foundation for life. Now here's the deal. My eyes look out, I see you. Your eyes see us. We don't see inward. And that's why prayer, meditation, and work that causes you. So when you take these books home, ask yourselves those deeper questions, because we talked about the most important relationships, and now we get into this part. In an average week, how much time do you spend working, studying, caring for the home, watching TV, exercising, working out, attending meetings, working with others, recreation, video games, Facebook, computer activities, texting? How much time do you spend building up your relationships that you said on the previous page were so vital? Because it's easy to be there for all things, for all people. Then you come home, want your feet up, want to watch the football match, or want to sit back. You don't interact with your own family, your own children. It's crazy. There was a man who was a great man who was friends of mine and Eric's. And this guy was a delegate, and he was friends with Bill Wilson. And him and Bill were tight. He sponsored Bill's brother-in-law. And what Leo shared with me, because he saw that there was this young couple that was struggling, and Leo said, I need to tell you about my daughter, Penny. And he gave me a copy of the letter, which I still have, and it was a letter from their daughter. And mom and dad were both rocking and rolling. They were all stars, delegates, friends of Bill and Lois's in AA. And the letter from the daughter said, Mom and Dad, do I need to become an alcoholic to have a relationship with you? What happened to our nights together as a family? When that old man shared that letter with me, I've never seen sadder eyes. Relationship thieves, relationship and life thieves, TV, Facebook, envy. I call Facebook envy. I'm healthy. I look at Facebook, I feel sick and worthless. She's the most centered human being I've ever known. And I said to Donna the other day, I go, when you look at social media, does that affect you? And what did you say?
Absolutely. You know, I see people on vacation. And even though, you know, all I want to do most times is be at home. But, you know, my God, they're having fun over there. You know, and it always makes you feel like you're missing out on something.
So if there's that kind of power affecting a woman that centered, take a man like me that off-centered. And so TV, Facebook envy, pornography, gambling, internet, texting, and then ask yourself, what are the things that are taking you away from what you said are the most important things in your life? Okay, then just because we get sober doesn't mean we get sane.
Okay, so be careful on the next page, page 21. Be careful with your associations and role models. Toxic people poison others. You know, who are you going to for your advice, your feedback to vent with? You know, we can find people that help build us up, or we can find people that build into our insanity and make us, you know, like, oh my God, he did that. You know, you should be really angry instead of, you know, hey, you might want to think about, you know, where you're at with that. And so, you know, be careful of who you put in your life. You know, who's in your front row in your life?
Yeah, where do you seek your counsel? That's so vitally important. Win the hearts of those you love and care about. List a few things and some of the ways you could show love and gratitude for them. You know, one of the things that happens all the time is I watch people come into recovery and they're dying. And all of a sudden we give them some triage, we help them, they go to some meetings, they get some meals, they get in a recovery home because they were homeless. Next thing you know, things are improving. And then in a very short amount of time, that same person who was so grateful to have a roof over their head and something to eat is bitching about the rules at the recovery home. You know, that, oh, I got to leave. You know, they got a curfew. This is bullshit. I got a house manager telling me shit. And I think to myself, you know, We got to keep this thing real, man. We got to fill up our hearts with love. Now, I got to tell you what, one of the ways that I keep my gratitude alive is by acts of service. So there are some women that will love just telling them things. And then there's others that want to have, they call them the languages of love, that want to see acts of service. In reality, I don't think there is one. I think there's just one, not five separate languages. And that all of us are responsible to one another and everybody in our lives to try to treat them the way we would want to be treated. In fact, the speaker tonight, Pat O, his mother, Patty O, was one of the most influential AA speakers in America. And she had her own 11-step prayer she would say every night, and it went like this: God, let me be treated tomorrow the way I treat others today. And if we could live our lives by those kinds of standards, so I'm a romantic, so I know that what I do is I want to keep things alive. I want to express the gratitude and the love that's in my heart. I don't want to have another day go by without telling the people that I love you, brother. I don't want to miss that shit. I want to tell people I love them. So when Donna turned, like, and you got to keep relationships real. And I'm not talking about just with your interpersonal partner. I'm talking with your children. I'm talking with your parents. There's so much we can do. Use your imagination. How can you reach out in the spirit of love and touch the lives of people around you? Starting here at this convention, spreading it out into your households. So when Donna turned 50 years of age, I planned a cool thing for her 50th. And we went up to the, I looked something up, and I found out that there was a meteor shower. Bzz, shooting stars, right? So I woke her up on her 50th birthday at 2 in the morning, and we are in the dead of winter, January 3rd, and I take her out into the forest in a blanket to this clearing, and she said, what is it? I go, it's your birthday present. And she said, what's my birthday present? And across the sky, one went, bzz. I said, there's the first one. And I counted with her 50 shooting stars. And that's what I gave her for that birthday.
It was really cool because they came quick. It was cold. If not, we'd both have frostbite.
Yeah.
Okay, conflict, arguing, and fighting fair. Conflict is part of every relationship. Arguments are constructive experiences that help to clear the air, or they can be brutal attacks that undermine the connection between two people. The choice is ours to make. You know, how do you argue? Do you name call? Do you tear somebody down? Or do you have constructive arguments? And, you know, when you're arguing, you have the right to say, you know what? You know, whether you're getting too agitated or your partner's getting too agitated, you can stop. And it doesn't mean that you're totally leaving it, but you can come back and you can discuss it later when you're calmer. And, you know, there's been times when we've had to go back 3 or 4 times before we can find a place where we can talk and be calm. But, you know, we don't name call. We don't tear each other down. And, you know, that's not how it's always been. I can tell you that, you know. But today it's, you know, we take a lot more care in how we argue. And then, you know, don't let others walk around your head with dirty shoes. I love that saying, you know. If your partner's having a bad day, it doesn't have to be your bad day. You know, I don't have to let him walk around, you know, my head. I don't have to let my son walk around when he's having a bad day, you know, when my mom's down. I don't have to have that affect who I am.
Okay, so one of the most important things I could possibly, if you took away one thing from this, it would be do not communicate with loved ones about anything other than what time you're meeting and where, via text or email, because it is not, it's not received the way you sent it. It's received in the emotional state of the person who is receiving it. And the amount of damage that is being done in our world today because everybody's first thought gets posted on a social media site or a text is sent out and you cannot take back what you have sent. Also, there is never an excuse for physical violence on either side, and emotional abuse is the same thing. I will share a brief story with you about my sore ribs. I used to have really, really sore ribs. And I didn't know why. When I first got sober, the first maybe 5 years of my sobriety, really sore ribs. And one night, me and Don had picked up, because we always have had old-timer couples around us to model behavior. And we had these old people named Pat and Betty P., and they're just the greatest folks, right? And so one day, Betty is in the back seat with Donna, and me and Pat are in the front seat like old folks driving to a meeting. And this woman, Betty, she says, you know, I was so sick of my husband, I decided I was just going to kill Pat. And I took his belt off. He came home and he passed out, and I took his belt off and I put his belt around his neck. And I started choking him. And he got up, he turned blue, and he opened his eyes, and I looked at him and I said, Pat Patterson, just how did you get that belt around your neck? And so then Donna says, she goes, well, you know, Betty, Terry would come home drunk and horny. I wanted nothing to do with him. He would fall right to sleep and start to snore. And then to get him to stop, I would just give him a shot in the ribs.
And it works. It works.
Yeah. And I stopped.
They have to be drunk enough, though. You don't try it on a sober person. Okay. So on the top of page 23, you know, don't pick up the rope. And when we start changing how we communicate, your partner is going to throw out the rope continually. And we don't have to pick up the rope. We don't have to do that, because it takes two people to play tug of war. And you're leaving all of that stuff right on there in front of them, instead of when you pick that rope up, man, you're just pulling it onto your side of the street. And you know, conflict cannot survive without your participation. So it really, really, and I will warn people at the beginning of this, when you start changing how you interact, your partner is automatically going to find different ways to push your buttons. And it's just human nature, because you don't know a different way to communicate. And so be patient and keep doing it. You know, don't pick up the rope, and it will get better, but usually it gets worse before it gets better.
And I have to tell you, one of the most important things that I've learned over the years is comparison is the death of happiness, right? So when I compare my recovery to yours, I feel not so good. When I compare my, you know, comparison just destroys things that are beautiful. There was a guy named Wavy Gravy, who was a hippie in the 60s, who did this deal called Bozos on the Bus. And what the belief was is that there are bozos on the bus. That's us. We're riding along in the bus, feeling a little bit like clowns ourselves. And we have this belief in our mind that there's another bus. And on that bus are where the healthy, happy people are. That's where they have great weekends, lively conversation, tremendous multiple orgasms, sexual encounter. It's all, those are the folks on that bus. And here I am on my bus, just another fucking bozo. What this story goes on, I'll look it up sometime, it's a beautiful story. And what the truth is that everybody on every bus is a bozo.
It's you.
Okay, here we go. All right, so the aim of an argument shouldn't be to win. You know, we develop in our maturity, in our relationships. I had a dear friend of mine, JT, and he said to me, he goes, Terry, if you ever, so what I got to tell you is be genuine in every relationship as you go out to find what you can do to be better with the people that you love. And so with JT, now this is how mature I am. JT says to me, he goes, Terry, if you really want to blow Donna's mind, tell her this. okay, I'm listening. And he says, tell her that the only thing you wish you had more of was time alone with her. I thought, damn, that's a good one. So I wrote it down. I swear to God, I wrote it down. And then I carried it around for the right moment to deliver my new line, right? Because I'm going to throw this line down. And so Donna's pissing me off, right? I'm thinking, man, what's wrong with this bitch? I'm telling you, she's just kidding. So we're going somewhere, and I remember we're backing out of the driveway, and I saw the slip of paper in the visor, and I pulled the paper down, and I stuck it in front of her face, and I said, hey, Donna, read that. And then she goes, yeah, and I go, I was going to say that to you.
Please. How many times was JT married?
I think six.
Yeah. Don't get your marital advice from someone who's been married six times. Okay, the modified Kohanan's do's and don'ts. Don't use hateful language. Don't be self-righteous. Don't raise your voice. Don't dominate, nag, scold, and complain. Don't lose your temper. Don't try to push anyone but yourself. Don't keep bringing up the past, and that's a big one. You know, we can't heal unless we let go. Don't keep checking up on your partner. Don't wallow in self-pity. Don't make threats you don't intend to carry out. Don't threaten to leave, because that just creates insecurity in relationships unless you're really wanting to leave. You know, or if there's danger. Don't be overprotective, and don't be a doormat. Do forgive. Do be honest with yourself. Do be humble. Do take it easy. Tension is harmful. Do play. Find recreation and hobbies. Do keep trying whenever you fail. Do pray. Do agree to disagree.
Okay, so we're going to jump over to page 27, and
we are?
Yeah.
Okay.
We're going to start talking about finances and money.
Yeah, that's a good one, huh? You know, I know for me, changing old habits and patterns around money and spending is hard to do. It takes work, time, patience, but the rewards are worth it. You know, living in active addiction for so long really rocked my sense of security financially, because there was just never enough money, and I could never trust what was in the bank, and it was very, very difficult. So I still have these old tapes that play, and for no unknown reason, I can go immediately into financial insecurities. But today I know there's ways for me to work through it without acting out of that and, becoming crazy, because I can become crazy over those behaviors.
Okay, so I'm going to touch real quickly on some financial stuff, and then Donna's going to tell one of her manipulative stories.
No, I'm not. No,
but so
I'm
like
not.
When we were new, we were broke, right? All people get a picture of, like, today, those of you that are just meeting us are this, like, seemingly happy couple. But, you know, this is like 40 years of marriage, 28 years of sobriety, involvement in Kohanan, and, you know, we've done a lot of work to get to our sense of well-being. The good news is that we do make progress. When we were first new, Donna would cut my hair. Because she's never cut hair before, but it was the only choice to get the haircut. And I remember the very first time we got treats in the house, it was like, oh, I'm all excited, and I'm eating this beef jerky, and this is so good, and Donna's just watching me smile. And I look at her, and I said, Donna, I'm not complaining, but this beef jerky's not very good. And she goes, well, that's because they're dog treats. So... finances, though.
You know, you don't have to stop them from doing stupid things.
So,
you know?
your tuna story?
I'm not going to tell that story.
Okay, she does.
Sometimes I've done things that are probably inappropriate to keep him home.
That's okay. But, you know, when finances leave a mark, right? Whatever happened to you in your life Whatever was done to you and what you've done to others, whatever you've experienced has left a mark on you. And time and work and recovery will heal those marks. But I just retired this past year. When I would say retirement to Donna, what she would hear is, I'm going to eat cat food for the rest of my life because there won't be enough money. There won't, you know, just because even though all of this security, it doesn't matter because what the diseased mind perceives is what it believes. Let's switch to the next page, which is, we need some help from you. What are the building blocks of a relationship? So I'd just like to hear it as loud as you want to shout it out. What is the most important building block in a relationship?
Trust.
Okay, so we have trust. Give me another one.
Mm-hmm. Yes, effective communication.
Communication. What else?
Yes.
Respect. What else?
Honesty.
I just heard a man's voice peep up. Sex, did I hear?
That's important, too.
Sex. Okay, what else? Okay, so it was interesting because what I heard there were women's voices. Because here's the deal. For most men, they don't think that way. They still have the caveman mentality. It's like, oh, she likes me. Good. Come to my cave with me, woman. And you think that that's going to solve everything, and it doesn't. It doesn't. So when we do this workshop, if we have a board where we can write it and we get the feedback, men believe overall that the number one thing that they think of is sex. And women across the... Well, it fixes everything. For others, so here's the reason that you have to give that some thought, is my experience with working with men has been this. Most of them never thought about what they wanted in a partner, what kind of partner they wanted to be, which way did they want to grow. And they never gave it a moment's consideration about what they were going to be.
Okay, then, so we need to nurture the spirit of oneness. You know, are your attitudes and actions adding to the spirit of oneness, or are they detracting from it? Do you praise each other enough? Do you say thank you? You know, for me, that was a really hard one to do at the beginning because I felt like he was, and we still go through this, I ask him sometimes if he wants a cookie, because he does things that I think would be like normal things that people would be doing, and I don't think about saying thank you. But, you know, it's really, really important for the everyday things to say thank you. And, you know, that is definitely something I've worked on in the last couple years. And do we lift each other up? Do you lift up your children, your friends, your family, your coworkers? Are you the same work person at home as you are in your meetings? That's huge. You know, it's always easy to, you know, be nice to the people at the meetings and then come home and grumble and go, ugh, you know. So we have to really, really look at our attitudes. Do we treat our loved ones with respect? You know, do you take quality time together? And quality time together isn't me on my phone going like this and him on his phone going like this and we're sitting next to each other. That's not quality time.
Right, so what we do is we plan our togetherness. We plan life, right? So the deal is that I want to have a full and complete life. I love to distance run. I plan it. I plan it in a way, though, so that it allows me, I get up at 4 o'clock in the morning during the winters to go run in the desert with a headlamp in the dark because I don't want to be gone all day Saturday or all day Sunday. So what we do is her and I will sit down and we will communicate, like, what do you have going this week? And then we'll communicate it on a daily basis, just so that we can then try to plan the chance and the time for us to be together and to be able to hang out. So this next little list is, here are some of the things that we do and that we've done that have helped us in our 40 years. Number one is no TV in the bedroom. And that includes no TV, and that includes no social media. Bedrooms are for sleep, reading, talking, and filling in the blank. But But it's not for a place. The amount of negativity being spewed out in the world that we live in, if you listen to that, you'll think that the world's going to hell. And in reality, the world is getting better and healthier all the time. We're proof of that. But it depends on what you tap into. So the last thing I want to do is have poison coming into my mind. It also is a great tool for sleeping well. And meditating yourself to sleep is a much better way than we go to the mailbox together. It builds trust. The reason we touch on that is because the mailbox for us was always a place of dishonesty. The secret bills, the problems, the bounce checks, those types of things. For those of you that know what checks are, because that's something that... So I know the world's changing, right? So then also mutual goals, right? We like to do stuff together, so we have mutual goals where we try to eat right together, and we try to... We have no financial secrets. We try to find humor in our arguments. We go for walks together as often as we can, usually a daily basis. Sharing household chores or duties. I make the bed, like I said last night, as a meditation. I do the dishes. Donna does most of the cooking. I do the dishes. And I do the dishes as an act of love. I realized I went a long time in my marriage without even knowing where the hell dishes went in my own home. You know, because I took for granted some of those things, because I bought into, as our friend Howard P. would talk about, these baby elephant beliefs that, you know, my job, I go out, bring the money, her job, and all these bullshit roles that haven't served society well, because we have half the people that get married get divorced. So if any of that shit was working, we wouldn't have this kind of an outcome. So we work on a lot of things together. We involve each other in our own recovery, and we use a lot of kind words.
Okay, so tools for building intimacy. You know, we pray together. We meditate. We do daily readings. We go for hikes, acts of kindness. Those go a long way. You know, be considerate. Be helpful. Express gratitude for one another. Keep your word. You know, be where you say you're going to be and do what you say you're going to do. It's really important in building that trust. Praise and say thank you. Focus on what is good. Write love letters and poems. He's much better at being romantic than I am. I'm really good at making sure things are done. He's definitely the romantic. It's true. Share honest feelings with each other. Be a good listener. Listen to understand, not to respond. You know, go on dates. And it's so important to keep that romance alive, no matter how long you've been together. Oh, now we're going to touch.
Touch,
hold hands, hug, kiss, make love often. The beauty of a long-term relationship is the intimacy builds over the years. You know, trust creates intimacy.
And we have an asterisk by the make love often. If you are new in a new, or if you are in a new relationship, skip this step. And instead, get one of these pamphlets that are, by the way, all over the place here, put together by our committee, but this is not CA-approved literature. And practice Ola. You know what that, did I say that right? Well, it's got very interesting Swedish words on here about what you could do, right? So don't jump into a sexual relationship too fast. It can ruin everything. Good friendships grow good relationships. And then newcomers, getting into a relationship is like two garbage trucks crashing in the night and trying to figure out whose junk is whose.
Yeah.
We already did that.
I don't understand. God, treat me tomorrow the way I treat my partner today. You know, that was Patio.
Okay, so communication, right? And somebody threw out effective communication, and that's really important. So most of us never think for ourselves. I got to tell you, that's my story. I was raised a certain way, and most people have political beliefs based on what their parents told them, or religious beliefs based on what their parents told them, or in defiance against what their parents told them. And most people don't ever stop to think about, that's why Ebby's statement about why don't you create your own concept of a higher power, Bill, was so revolutionary at that time, and it still is today. But most people don't ever take the time to figure out who they are, what they are. A lot of people don't even know what their partner's favorite color is. They don't know their kid's friend's name. We know every star on TV. We know every sitcom, but we don't know the neighbors on the left and the right. What's happened, and I'm telling you what's happened, is the world has become increasingly isolated. And the more isolated an addict becomes, or a codependent, or a Kohanon becomes, the more deadly it becomes. Because the disease feasts on, its first goal is to cut me out of the herd, to get me separate from everyone. The word communication, the root origin of the word is commune, which means to be with. That's what communication is. So communication can't be a text. It can't be a quick post, a like, whatever other forms of bullshit where we're taking. We don't even say that you made me laugh. It's LOL. It's like everything is shorter, shorter, shorter. The communication is less and less and less. And we need each other more and more. I believe that the way that I asked my aunt when she turned 100 years old, I said, what's the most important thing you've seen in your lifetime? And she said it was the television. And she said, and her eyes got sad. And she said, because when the TV went on, everybody went inside their house and they never came back out. It's even worse now. Look at the meetings. So many times, everybody's there, everybody's here, everybody's there. It's like, fuck, right? The world used to live, it's in the U.S., it's horrible. You go in the U.S. in a restaurant, and there's TVs everywhere in the restaurant. There's automatic screens. There's digital 3D tabletops and fuck, whatever happened to, how are you? How's your son Josh doing? What's happening, Danny? It's good to see you, brother. What's new in your life? See, the world used to live on the front porch. In communion, Cocaine Anonymous is the new front porch. We are the hope of the world. We're no longer the scourge of it. So communication.
So effective communication, and I want to talk a little bit about that, is, you know, we don't, I call it vomiting on your partner. So, you know, that's not communication. When you just, you know, call your sponsor. Call a friend. Because your partner wants to solve those problems. And your partner wants to make you better. And sometimes there's nothing that you can do. Excuse me. So, you know, think about what you're communicating. And, you know, there's ways of effectively communicating and there's ways of just, you know, because men want to fix their partner. I think all of us want to fix what's hurting in our partner. And sometimes we just need to vent. So be a good listener. Men are generally poor listeners.
What?
So here it says, get a hearing test. I say, we need to watch our spending.
I hear I'm a failure and I'm not a good provider. You know, I mean, it's crazy how our minds think. It blows my mind. But I'll tell you, it's something that we're constantly working on, right? So I'm around a lot of good people that are trying to grow in their relationships, people that are solution-oriented and trying to solve problems and trying to help each other to get better. And so on October 14th, 2017, I had this awareness, and the awareness that I was not being as kind as I wanted to be to my partner. And I wasn't being as communicative as I wanted to be. I'll be on the phone with a newcomer for 45 minutes. Oh, yeah. And then Donna goes, hey, how are you doing? Oh, I'm fine. And that was it. And so I asked my higher power, because I understand lack of power is my dilemma. I asked my higher power to help me with this. And I wrote it down in my phone because I used the tools of today to benefit my life. And I put in the tool that I wanted. I asked my higher power to help me to be kinder and more communicative. I set up a daily reminder, and every day it would pop up, and I would look at it, and I would say that prayer, God, help me to be kinder and more communicative. And what happened as a result of that, then I started to see how God responded to my prayer. And then I'd write notes about how God responded to my prayer. And if anybody wants to see that list, it's a super long list in the ways that I've watched my higher power respond to that prayer that I made on that date. Okay, let's go to trust. Are you honest with yourself? I can't trust you if I can't trust me.
Do you allow past problems to poison your present relationship? Man, we carry a lot of baggage with us. You know, we get to choose whether we want to use it in a positive way or a negative way.
Oh, I'm missing. I wasn't paying attention or listening.
Yeah.
Do my words and my actions meet, and am I reliable and considerate? Sometimes I'll talk to guys and they'll say, you know, man, my family, they just don't respect my recovery. And when I see that happening, I got to tell, man, it's time to take a look at yourself one more time. Let's get back into these steps and let's see what's going on, because anybody who knows me and my family should love and respect my recovery, because they understand that it's kind of the fountain from which the good in me flows. Because without this program, I am, like it says in the big book, I'm the tornado roaring through the lives of other people.
Do I call when something comes up? And that's really important to help build that trust and that sense of security. It's not, you know, so many people are like, well, I don't need to do that. Yeah, you do. You do. It just helps build that sense of trust. It doesn't take anything away from you. Don't be the little nipping dog. I thought that was quite amusing. You know, I was driving right after he got clean and sober. You know, I had to solve the world immediately, all the problems that had built up. And when he'd walk in, I'd be like, we need to do this and this and this and this. And he'd go, I just need to go to a meeting. And, you know, I'm driving one day and I hear clear as day, would you want to come home to you? And the answer was hell no. I wouldn't want to come home to me. And so be the person you want to come home to. Trust should be earned, not given. You know, do we, you know, is your partner doing things to help build trust? Are you doing things to build trust? It's not a given. Don't trust me just because I say I'm honest. Don't trust me just because I say things. Our actions speak so much louder than words.
And the next quote says, jealousy finds a rose and leaves behind a thorn. So I got to tell you this story, right? This is like with, I don't know how many years, close to 20 years of sobriety, right? So this is not a vision for hope. Maybe it is. But fact is, it's a reality of my addicted mind. So here's the story I'm going to tell you. So I'm in the backyard doing step work on a Saturday with a sponsee. And we're in the big book and we're having a great time. And this dude walks up in my backyard, and he comes up there, and he's this great, big, handsome Hawaiian dude with long hair, and he's got his kid with him. He goes, hey, man, what's happening? My name's Tony. I'm here to go fishing with Donna's brother, Larry, who is down fishing. We lived on a little lake. And so I go, well, they're right over there. That's cool. Go enjoy yourself. So Tony and his son go fishing. Well, we had a house that Donna was rehabilitating in Phoenix. And one of my sponsees was doing some work at that house. And I called up a few days later, and I get my guy on the phone, not a cloud on the horizon. And I say, hey, brother, what's happening? How are you doing? He goes, oh, I'm doing good. He goes, you know, there was that big bamboo patch at this place. I said, yeah. He goes, I've been chopping down bamboo all day for Tony. And I thought, that bitch. You know, Tony, how would Tony know? My mind just went, and my mind told me, how would Tony know I have that house? How would he know that we have bamboo there if Donna wasn't meeting up with Tony? So now that sounds funny, but I got to tell you, it was tragically pathetic and horrible to feel that. So I'm a runner. I go hit the trail. I'm praying to God. And then every happy song, I'm turning it off and I'm going, I found love on a two-way street, lost it on a lonely highway. And I'm thinking, damn, this is a shame that it's going to end like this. So I get home. And Donna's there, and we always have our time together when we get home where we check in with each other. And she goes, "Hey, what's up?" She could tell I was upset. And I said, "You know, Donna, I'm cool now. I'm recovered a lot of years." I said, "Tell me about Tony." And Donna looks at him. She goes, "Who's Tony?" I said, "Listen, let's not have it go down like this. Just tell me the truth, and we'll just move on, you know." And so then she realizes what it is. She goes, "Tony, who's Tony?" I go, "You know, your brother Larry's Hawaiian friend." And she goes, "Oh, baby." And then she tells me the story, right? So she's telling her brother, "Hey, we're chopping down bamboo." And so he says, "Well, do you mind if I come gather up that bamboo for Tony? Because him and his wife just moved into a new house, and they'd like to put bamboo to remind him of what it was like living in the islands." But to me, it was the end of my marriage. That did not make me, you know. Now, this is a guy with 20 years of sobriety, whatever number of years at that time, close to 30 years or more of marriage. So what I'm telling you is that I have a disease that centers in my mind that jumps me sometimes. And sometimes it jumps me with such bullshit, but with such ferocity that I believe the shit this diseased mind gives me. And then my mind starts searching everything to try to support that story. That's why we need each other so desperately, so we can get that noise out of our heads in an appropriate way so we can get better.
Okay, forgiveness is not forgetting. You know, old fears and resentments, if we don't let go of those, then it's just going to eat us up and we can't heal. And I got to tell you that someone, you know, what's a secret to a long marriage for me is a really good sense of humor. Because some of the stuff he comes up with, I just sit there and go, "Really? Oh, that's painful." Forgiveness and amnesia are two different things. You know, it doesn't mean that we turn our back on current wrong behaviors. You can't let other people establish your boundaries for you. And then over here on page 36, you know, there's an assignment about... you know, what attracted you to your partner? So many times we get so caught up in living life and we've been together for a while and we forget what brought us together. You know, what attracted us to the person we're with, because so many other things get in the way. And so really taking a look at that and writing it down and just kind of remembering what brought you together. And so... laugh when you can and apologize when you should. Man, we laugh a lot. We laugh a lot, you know. And then a gratitude list is an awesome thing. You know, write 5 things that you're grateful for about your relationship and keep looking for. And they can be really, really little things like, you know, just a smile or a touch as the person passes. But it's to help you look for the little things in your life that we take for granted every day.
And don't do that just in your relationship with your partner. Try that with your children. Try finding 5 things you're grateful for with your parents or your siblings, or try this one with the difficult coworkers or the most hard people in your life to get along with. Start doing that. Start pumping good and love out into the world and watch how the universe responds, because life does not last forever. Every single person you know is going to die. I want the last words and actions I take towards all people, especially to those whom I love, to be kind, affirming, and loving. I don't want to waste any more time hung up on bullshit. And I've learned a lot over the years. I learned in communication. Donna said we learn to laugh. And what I learned from Donna, because I hang out with her a lot, is she was telling one of her girlfriends one day, "You know, Terry's kind of full of shit sometimes, and it'll get to me." And so I just respond to him, "You know, you may be right." And I thought, "Oh, that's..." So next time we're having a conversation and we're having an argument, she goes, "You know, honey, you may be right." And I just smile inside.
Yeah, you don't want him to know those things, you know?
Okay. No, let's go ahead and... Where are we at?
I don't know where we're at. That's you.
All right, we're almost done. Write on page 39, write a love letter to your partner or to yourself, or to your higher power. This is a love letter I wrote Donna recently. write your own. It's a beautiful thing, man. So many times people think how grateful they are and how much they love, but don't express it. What we ought to do when this is over, man, is we ought to blow up our phones, tell people that we love them. Let go of the difficulties and the differences. People want to feel loved, supported, valued, respected, wanted, needed, desired, sought after, important, and worthwhile.
You know, relationships, be my friend, not my project. You know, I'm not, he's not my project. I don't need to change him in any way.
And starting today, pursue the hearts of your loved ones. Use words of affirmation. You're kind, you're beautiful, you're important to me. Treat others the way you want to be treated. We win our partners, and then we win our partners, we get our families, and we take the people for granted. Write things. There's an assignment where you can do some work on doing less of that. And don't betray the commitments you made to each other when you started out on your journey together. When you first meet, I'll do anything for you, I love you. Don't betray those commitments. Find new ways to breathe life and let the healing spirit of the 12 steps breathe life into it.
Now there's a part in here, it says, beware, a fight or argument may come after this workshop. And it's true, because you guys are learning a different way to communicate, and things are going to come up. And so just be kind and patient, you know, and loving towards each other. And understand that it doesn't happen overnight, and, you know, learning new ways to communicate takes time. So be patient with yourself and with your partner. And one day at a time, it is possible to live a life filled with hope, faith, and courage.
Okay, and at the back, thank you. I love you.